Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for April 1st. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen, and it's April, fool! Baseball's back, baby!
Yes, I got you. Well, thank you, brother. I'm fine, thanks. Yourself?
I don't remember asking you.
I'm doing fighting. Well.
I usually do, but I don't think I asked you. But cool, good. I'm doing well. I'm getting over this attack of the killer pollen. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. But we're going to be talking about baseball games, and we did interviews at stadiums, and the weather's getting warm, so it's a great time of year.
Okay, yeah. Lots of things going on, so let's roll, baby.
All right. Well, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Natale Soto of the DeNA Bay Stars. We're going to talk about opening weekend. We're going to talk about Ichiro Suzuki because no one can get enough of that topic. And we've got a whole bunch more, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so the good news that I have not shared with you, I think, yet on the show officially, is that my little Wonder Twins are starting nursery school tomorrow, and mm-hmm. that means I will no longer need to be watching them all day on Monday, and so I can fall asleep and take a nap whenever I want, which means we can regularly tape the show on Sunday nights this season, schedule permitting, because sometimes we're going to just have to do it on Saturday morning or Sunday morning or whatever, but normally on Sunday nights, so we can get those full series in. That should be fun.
Oh, I see. Okay, I get you. So it is actually relevant to the listeners that we tape Sunday night. Okay, got it.
Yeah, well, we want to get the end of the series in. Last year, we were talking about series and saying, well, we're wondering if so-and-so team can get that sweep or whatever it is, but we were also coming out on Monday, so it really didn't make sense. So it's nice to be able to get the whole look at the series, whatever we're talking about, whether it's a sweep or split or whatever happens, and we can talk about it and get it to you in a timely fashion. So I'm excited about that.
So this is good because that means this year John will be making more sense.
I don't make sense. I make dollars. Let's go.
Wow.
Hashtag high heat.
All right. With that, with Jim cowering from his computer, let's talk about Natale Soto. He's last mm-hmm. year's Central League home run leader or home run king. He's from Puerto Rico. This is the second time on the show. I talked to him last year, long before he went on that big second half run. that got him the home run title. But we spoke on Saturday at Yokohama Stadium. And those of you who follow me on Twitter might have seen my tweet of the new press facility there. And, you know, we complained. I don't know if you complained. I complained about it, Jim. The temporary press facility, which was...
Was that temporary?
I think the team wanted to make it perfect, permanent, but there were too many complaints. I'm assuming it was temporary because they've redone it and they put it now. It's in the middle, not on the side. And it's still at the top. And you still have to go on a little bit of a trek to get there. You've got to go out the entrance, the press entrance, and then across the parking little structure there and into a door and follow the trail. You got to follow the yellow brick road and leave some breadcrumbs.
Man, they're going to leave like cookie crumbs, breadcrumbs.
You got to do Hansel and Gretel and leave some breadcrumbs so you can find your way back. But there's an elevator. It's really nice once you get up there. You just don't want to be going back and forth. And it's anyway, enough about us. But it's nice. And so anyway, Natale, we sat down just behind the Bay Stars dugout, and you know he's listed as an infielder, but we know he plays the outfield, and it looks like he's going to be the second baseman now for Yokohama for a while. If he can stay healthy and perform, he'll certainly fill a hole at that position, and he's an adequate defender. And I saw, like I said, you'll hear in the interview, he was working hard that day, just taking a lot more ground balls at that position than you normally see foreign players doing. And I think he just has to stay sharp, stay ready. And that's just something he's going to have to work on while playing second base. You know, I wanted to talk about the fact that last year he had those 41 home runs in 107 games. And the second, the guy who's finished second behind him in the Central League was Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, his teammate. Mm. And he had 38 home runs, but Tsutsugo played in 139 games. So it was an incredible run that Soto went on the second half of the season. Anyway, Let's hear what he had to say about starting off the season with the Bay Stars. We're here with Neftali Soto of the Yokohama Bay Stars. Thanks a lot for taking some time with us, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, what does opening day or opening night mean to you?
It's so exciting. It's like butterflies in your stomach. It's like when you're young, that first game is always important. It's like emotions and all that, and it's great. It's great, and good thing we win the first game, so that was a good start.
Right. And it was a really close game last night until late, so I expect a lot of stressful games this season. But what are those, what are these teams like in the Central League? It seems like they're all very close.
They are. They're pretty good teams, and it's a lot even this year, and we all got a chance to win it, and but it's good. It's good competition, and I'm glad that we started on the right path.
Now, what sets the Bay Stars apart from the other teams?
I don't know. I think we got a great lineup. We can hit for power. We can hit for average too, and our pitching staff is great. So I think we got a complete team, and just part of us. And now that start working together and trying to figure it out and start winning.
Well, what's the difference between the Bay Stars from this year and the Bay Stars from last season?
I don't know. I think we're hungry. Like, we didn't get to the playoffs last year, and that was one thing we were sad about. We were mad about it. And now, like, everybody's on the same mentality to just go to the playoffs and win it all. So I think just the mental part is more strong this year.
Now, you had an outstanding second half, especially with the home runs last year. So what's different about your approach to this season?
Not much. I mean,
try to keep it going, man.
Yeah, try to keep it going. Try to start early this year. Nothing. Just thank God I had a great second half. Overall, good season overall.
One more title, man.
Yeah. That was great. It was great. But, hey, I just don't let it get in my head and keep working hard and trying to do my best.
Okay, now speaking of working hard, I saw you out there working at second base, and I know you play several positions. Where do you think you'll get your most starts on defense this year?
This year, I don't know.
I knew you were going to say that. I actually knew you were going to tell me that.
I don't know. Well, from now on, I'm playing second, but you never know. You never know. I'm ready to play every position they put me in, so I'm good.
Okay. All right. What's different for you this second season with the Bay Stars?
People know me better than last year, and it's more of a people respect me more now, and it's a learning experience still. I mean, it's second year, but I'm still learning, it's great. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Nothing much. I get it. Now, your team hit a bunch of home runs last year, but the numbers say compared to the other teams, your offense really wasn't that great as a team. So what kind of focus is there on situational hitting and trying to get that one run and play a little bit differently?
Just trying to get our RBIs, man. RBI wins games. That's much. We need to score more, and we got a great team to do it. I mean, we can change a game in one inning, two at bat, one at bat. We can change the course of the game. So it's great. Great team, and I think we're focused on that this year.
As manager Alex Ramirez walks by and slaps me on the back. Now, we hear a lot about the pace of play and speeding up baseball, and perhaps some of those rules that they do, some of the rule changes that happen in MLB will come to NPB at some point. So how do you feel about pitch clocks and three batter minimums and all that stuff? Because I'm sure you heard about it.
I heard about it. There's some that I like. There's some that I don't like. I mean, it's just part of the game. I think it's good to speed up the game, but in one part, that's the part. It's part of the game. It's been here for so long that you can change it, speed it up, but I don't feel like changing the main baseball stuff, like the rules and all that. So I don't know. I'm in between.
Do you think the pitch clock actually helps speed it up, or because that affects the batter as well? They talk about the pitcher, but the batter has to be ready too. So
yeah, but I don't think about that much. I think it speed it up a little bit. I mean, but on the same way, it's good. I think it's good for both. But there's some rules like they were talking about. I don't get it. So
same here.
Like pitchers throwing to three batters. I mean, where's the lefty specialist? No more job for him. It's I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. All right, so you guys have the series against the Dragons here. You're gonna play today and tomorrow, and head into next week. But again, you won the first game, so when you win that first game and you get some momentum, is it a big deal to the players, or is it not a big deal?
It's a big deal. It's like getting your first hit in the season. You don't have that pressure to win, and you don't have to. It's like for me, it's good to get my first hit and my first strikeout. I don't have to think about striking out or getting a hit. So it's the same thing about winning. So you just start winning, you get that one out of the way, and keep going.
All right. Well, I know we have a lot of BayStars followers who follow us on the podcast, so I know they will say good luck to you and have a good season.
Thank you. I'll do my best.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot, Neftali. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always good to talk to him. And he's, you know what I really liked was, it was, how can I say this? I get jaded about opening day. I mean, I like the baseball, but I got so much work to do around opening day.
So it's about you.
Of course it's about me. But the point is, hearing somebody be really excited about it,
right,
was cool.
Yeah, butterflies. I was surprised to hear that.
I enjoyed that. Yeah. That was great. Okay, so that was one thing that really picked me up. I really enjoyed that. And, you know, I think the other thing is that was interesting is when you asked him what about, changes to the game. He's really good. You know, English is not his first language, but he's a master at cliches. Don't change part of the game. You know, he's got them all, baby.
Right.
He's now that he's mastered the cliches, now he can master second base, and he's going to be like Renaissance man. So, and I guess my take on the, I heard you guys, what's going to happen to the left-handed pitchers, whose only purpose in life is to throw to one or two batters. And, of course, my answer is same as always. Nobody pays to see the guy who's the last guy on the roster come in. Nobody buys a ticket saying, that left-hander is not good enough to do anything else in the game can play so I can watch him.
Don't say nobody. There's always friends and family, man.
True. The girlfriend and the wife, not necessarily at the same time.
Cousins.
Friends. Yeah, exactly. Friends. They're cousins. They're good friends. Okay. So anyway, I'm just saying, yes, there are people who show up and they do have fans, but I'm saying no. I mean, I don't want to see the guy who's the 20. You know, it's like coming to say, I hope so-and-so gets in the game and pinch runs.
Right.
Because that's,
That's worth my ticket right there. That's worth the price of admission.
Okay, exactly. Okay, so that's my take on it. So as much as I'm a labor guy and I'm all for labor, and no, I don't want to necessarily protect the job of the guy who wouldn't be there if it weren't for a strategic or a tactical advantage that everybody uses, so it's no real advantage.
Right. Okay. I get you.
It's just a time waster.
I get you.
So, okay.
And, I know he's an infielder, but I think he snuck a backdoor slider in there. He said early on, he said the team was complete. It's a really good team, offensively, defensively, pitching. Now we have to work together and figure it out. And that's the comment that stayed with me, you know.
Okay, I heard that, yeah.
The most after I walked away and said goodbye and everything, I'm like, you know, that's an important aspect of the game because it's more than talent, and you can have a lot of talent and still not win, and there's reasons for it. And I think, you know, there's so much more to baseball than just the numbers that we count all the time. You know, there's being in the right place defensively. There's being in the right position to take a cutoff throw, not make it, but take it. There's not missing signs. There's making good tags on runners to get them out when you get a throw that's good. I mean, there's a lot of little details in the game, and I think I think that's what he's talking about. Pay attention to the finer points. Make you know, make the extra effort in the mental game as well. So when he said figure it out, because he didn't say execute, and a lot of times it's about execution, right? It's just about who can get it done. But you also have this, these mental parts of the game that are, like I said, they don't they don't really show up in the stats. And I remember Shinya Miyamoto, when he was playing with the Yakult Swallows, told me that. He says, look, everybody, not everybody can get a hit, but everybody can be in the right spot and do what they're supposed to do on defense and run the bases the right way. Make sure you read, you know, read the ball off the bat and run the bases and take that extra base and do all those little things that people don't really see or just take for granted or ignore, you know, choose to ignore, if you ask me, in some in some aspects. And so I thought that was the one thing. And if Tali, I'm going to ask him next time if he can pitch, because that was a really good backdoor slider.
Well, I could, I think there's a number of other ways you could read into it, but I guess if my question to that would be, or my interpretation would be, we're not a finished product. We got, in other words, I think we've got all the pieces, but we might not all be in the right places.
Huh. Well, I mean, yeah, figure it out could be, I guess you can interpret it differently.
Could be
ways,
a couple of different things.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought it was, he's really a wonderful guy to talk to. We spent a long time last year, unfortunately, a story that never got written about the effects of the hurricane in Puerto Rico. So it was fairly charged discussion, and he's very emotional, very straight up guy. Not always just easy with the cliches, so I jest a little bit.
Right. Well, we know that.
A little. Just a little.
Right. I also liked his comment about getting the RBIs. You know, I asked him about situational. I was kind of specific about situational hitting, and he's saying, hey, man, we got to drive those guys in when we get the opportunities. And that's, you know, that's fine and good. I don't know if it's that easy. I don't know. You and I talked about this, I guess, more than a decade ago in the office, and about trying to hit with guys on base, and if it's harder or if it's easier, or is there such thing as clutch hitting and all that stuff. And yeah, you know, I don't know. There's guys on base and you need to drive them in, but you need to get hits to generate those RBI chances too. So all the hits are important.
Right. You can't put the guys on base in front of you.
Yes. No, you cannot. You cannot. But you can try to drive them in, and it all works. Sometimes it's easier. You just need a fly ball, or you need a ground ball in the right spot. And sometimes it's harder. There's a runner on first base and two out, and you need a ball in the gap somewhere, or a home run, or something, an extra base hit. So whatever the situation is. But I want to keep an eye on them and see how they do in late game, high leverage situations with the bat. And they were able to win today on Sunday, and they got, I think they got three hits. They put three hits together and won the game in the ninth inning. So that's important, and that's crucial, and that's what's going to push them. You know, I asked them what makes you guys better than some of the other teams, and certainly coming through in the clutch will do that. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that consistently, and that's what it's going to take.
I thought the better question was what's the difference? What separates you, or what's the difference between this year's Bay Stars and last year's Bay Stars? I thought that was probably more telling. It's very hard to compare yourself to other teams. It's a task. Probably, if I was asked, I would say I don't have any idea.
Certainly not at this point in the season when they haven't seen him. But they've seen.
But on the other hand, you do get it. You do get a sense for where the team was at the same place a year ago, where they finished and how they grew, and thinking, okay, what have we got this year we didn't have last year? I think the other interesting thing for me is the fact with him playing second base. It's ironic because, Jose Lopez was of course a second baseman.
Yeah, when he came to Japan, yeah.
And he was a second baseman in the majors, and he came to Japan as a second baseman, and they moved him to first, and they moved him to the bench, and then he moved to Yokohama, right. But where he was happy because they let him play.
Right.
But the whole point is that he was that kind of big bopping second baseman, and now they've got. I mean, it's an interesting move to have a guy, to put, it's almost like a major league move to say, we're going to sacrifice, it's the Casey McGee. Let's just put this guy at second base and let him drive in runs and not worry too much about the extra hits we're going to allow.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be a huge plus over the guy who can take away the extra hits, but doesn't get any.
Yeah. And he's no Ryosuke Kikuchi. He's no Naoki Yoshikawa, but he is adequate. I mean, I saw him, he's a big guy.
I think he is a big guy. So until I've seen it, I'm going to guess he's probably like Casey, below average. I think fairly far below average, but that's not a huge, but on the other hand, like I said, if you've got a guy who can't hit playing second base because he's a field, it's fine. It all depends on whether it's going to overload your defense. I mean, there's too many defensively weak areas that, that extra giving up those extra hits is going to compound with the other extra hits here and the other extra hits there to cause a defensive meltdown. I mean, that's the problem. If you're above average everywhere else, or average or close to above average everywhere else, and you've got a guy like that at second base, it's really no sweat. I mean, especially if the guy can really bop.
Yeah, I mean.
And of course, the other thing is you want him to be, which he did seem to be able to do, didn't seem to bother his, it in my estimation, just off the cuff, no, I'm not looking at the data, but I didn't occur to me that his offense was bothered by whether he was at first or second or right or third last year. Pretty much wherever they put him, he seemed to
hit. Yeah.
But again, that's just my off the cuff.
Right. I would go along with that. I was out there. I mean, he's a big guy. I think I mentioned that last year when he was on the show. He's got long legs. He's tall. He's thick. So he doesn't look like your typical second base man, especially in Japan. But he's very light on his feet. I watched the workout, and if you didn't know how big he was and you were watching from across the field, you wouldn't think twice about it. He looks like a second baseman. And he just, I think he came into the season, and I think he's been working through the preseason and the spring knowing that he's going to get a lot of time at second base, and so he's ready. So, I don't know about comparing him to Casey. I think he's somewhere between Casey and some of the other second basemen in the Central League. But again, I think, I don't know what Chunichi has at second base. I've seen Toshiki Abe is the second baseman at Chunichi, and I don't know what he is, and I'm not sure that he'll stick around that long, but I'm sure Neftali is just as good as he is. So I'm not going to say he's.
Well, I would, and I'll tell you why, is because generally Japanese teams are very reluctant to use guys who aren't pretty good gloves at second base. So I would think for somebody who's having to work at it and sort of like learn the basics, I think it's going to be, we like him, and personally, I think he's a great guy, and I think he's a heck of a player. But to suddenly say he's going to be as good as a bunch of guys who are chosen for their gloves, and it's not a position he's really familiar with, I think that's a stretch. I mean, I would want to give enough credit to the guys who've made that position their, you know, profession.
Sure. I'm not even sure about if anybody has made that job their profession in Chunichi. I know.
Well, okay, Chunichi Dragon. Yeah. I mean, okay.
I was picking out probably the newest second baseman to pick on him. So,
okay. I mean, we could bring the Tokushima Indigo Blue Sox in there too and see about their second base.
Right.
I mean, Rockten's got Asamura, and he's below average. So
there's some guys out there. He's going to be all right. I think at second base. All right.
I hope so.
All right. Well, thanks again, okay. Neftali. We'll see you around out there. I did get to talk a little bit to Spencer Patton, with whom I spoke at camp this year as well.
Wow.
So I got to chat with him
too. You only talked a little bit to Spencer?
Well, up until when Neftali came up and he said, let's talk right now. And I had to say goodbye. But yeah, it was only a little bit.
Yeah, that's not easy because Spencer's got... He's very opinionated, and he's a joy to talk to.
It's fun, man. It's
great. He likes to talk.
It's great.
He likes to talk, so it's always a thrill.
Certainly is. All right, so let's make a seamless transition and talk about opening weekend. And we're talking about games, dude. And opening day was awesome. We had 3 walk-offs. We had the first extra inning walk-off grand slam in MPB history by Sho Nakata of the Fighters. We had Kyota Fujiwara of the Lotte Marines. He became the first straight from high school rookie to start in center field and get a hit in his first game. And man, there was a lot of fun stuff that went on opening day. The whole weekend was good. And the Bay Stars took 2 of 3 in their series against the Dragons. But it was a struggle. I would say it was a struggle from Friday opening pitch to Sunday closing pitch. I think the Dragons played well, but I think, you know, obviously I have the Bay Stars finishing well, doing well and making the playoffs this year. But I think a lot of these games are going to be a struggle, and it totally was on Friday. You know, no scoreless into the 8th inning, and the Bay Stars eventually win this thing 8-0. But it seems to drain them because the next day they lost 9-1. So I enjoyed that series. And the Dragons, again, it looked like they might have even been able to win today on Sunday. They had runners on. They had Dion Viciedo at the plate in a leverage situation late in the game, and he wasn't able to get the hit that particular at bat. And then the Bay Stars rally and win that game with...
I was going to say, it did occur to me, I saw something on Twitter today that I think Hideyuki Owano is one of the Dragons pitching coaches now.
Uh-huh.
And somebody was saying that Tsuyoshi Yoda has a former relief pitcher, and he's apparently, they've got a bullpen plan where they're going to regulate the usage out of the bullpen and make sure everybody gets lots of work.
Lots of work or... Not
lots
too
of
much
regular work.
Work.
Yeah. No, lots of regular work as opposed to not too much all at once and not, you know, your role hasn't come up in 2 weeks. That's why you're rusty, you know, that kind of stuff, which is very typical in Japan.
Mm.
And as soon as I saw the tweet and it said, pitching coach Owano said, the light bulb just bing went off because some of you will remember... Some of you older people remember the 1998 Bay Stars when they won the Central League in the Japan Series, and Hideyuki Owano was a key member of their middle relief team, and they had the middle relief rotation from the idea of then manager Hiroshi Gondo.
Right.
And his point was, I'm going to have like 5 middle relievers, and I'm just going to bring them in one after the other as I need them. So you know who's next in line. You know, like, if I need a guy in the 5th inning, I'm going to go to the first guy in the rotation. And everybody knew when their turn was coming up. And so he spaced out the workload, and everybody was very effective. And a lot of people were criticizing him. Well, you know, you can't win if people, you know, he said, I don't care about the matchups as much as I care that the guys know what their role is. And they can prepare for their role, and they can pitch regularly.
And yeah,
because that nonsense of sitting around and waiting for minuscule little advantages, take it and throw it in the garbage can, is what he said. So when Iwano was part of that, and I heard that they've got this unusual workload plan for their bullpen, light bulb time. So that's something I want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, well, it was somebody I probably wouldn't put in the game today who lost it. It was Ryosuke Oguma, who was pitching, and he lost it in the ninth. And all right, if that's what you want to do. But, they pitched well on Friday. Shotaro Kasahara tried to out-duel Shota Imanaga, and Imanaga was dominant over eight innings. He fanned 11, and, he even got a hit and scored the first run of the season for the Bay Stars. So it was fun. And then Daisuke Yamai, not the one with the bad shoulder, Daisuke, but the 40-year-old Daisuke. Okay. On Saturday, and he pitched fairly well for him. It was a five and dive effort for him, but he did really well. And then they got enough runs, and that was Yoda's first managerial win, so that was good for them. But they've got a lot of mixing and matching to do. I think we talked about that, and I'm sure if it's going to be a rotation, that's going to be fine. But there will be days when you probably want to look at the matchups, because I don't think they had a good situation going on there in the ninth inning, and it cost them the game. But they're going to lose a lot of games, so I mean, they're going to have to hit. They're going to have to get hits to win some of those games. Meanwhile, the Giants took two out of three at Mazda Zoom Zoom Stadium. That was a house that has been really a house of horrors for them the past two seasons.
Mm.
And
yeah, it looked like it was going to start that way too. I mean, the first game, and
oh yeah,
and I know, and that was the second time in his career that Yoshihiro Maro went 0-for-4 with four strikeouts.
And on Friday night, on opening night.
Well, that's actually not true. He went 0-for-4 in four plate appearances with four strikeouts. And then last year, once he was 0-for-4 with a walk,
mm-hmm,
and four strikeouts. But yeah, second time he was four up, four down, four times, sit down, take a seat.
Well, one of them, I think he kind of got robbed. It was a pitch outside, and he...
Yeah, there was a little bit of that.
But that's how it goes.
But it was hard. Daichi Osara, he was just remarkable.
He was.
His location was good. He was throwing the ball where he wanted. He had some of his cutters were just dynamite.
He was a word I don't like to use that much. He was brilliant. Yeah, it was awesome.
He was. I mean, he had some that weren't running, but he had some that I think... Mariano Rivera would have looked and said, "Did I throw that?" because they were some of the best. I've seen some good ones in Japan. You don't see them a lot because the ball doesn't really favor cutters.
Mm-hmm.
In NPB, it doesn't run a lot.
Okay,
but those were some. He was throwing some nasty stuff and locating his curve. I mean, he threw his breaking ball where he wanted. He threw his fastball. It was cutter, fastball, breaking ball. Bam, 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 bam. Nobody knew it was coming. He was the other guy. We had two pitchers over the weekend who had 11 strikeouts.
Imanaga was the other. Yeah,
Imanaga was the other, and Osara was one as well. So really fun. But the Giants came back and won two games. I didn't see Saturday's game. I did watch a little bit of today. So
yeah, that was the Saturday. Was the Alex Guerrero "Don't leave me on the bench and forget about me" game he had.
despite all reason to do so.
Well, actually, yeah, that was one of the things I was chatting about with Spencer. He's like, how could the Giants not play any of their foreign guys in that first game? And I said, they're going to get their at bats. They didn't bring them here. They don't have them on the roster to gather dust. I said, they're going to get their...
Well, they did. Well, Guerrero gathered dust last year.
Well, he...
of course, he didn't produce either.
Well, yeah, he was on the farm. And yeah, he got his opportunities. He didn't meet their expectations. So we don't know what those are, but he didn't meet them.
Indeed. Sometimes they're secret expectations.
Right, right. And we don't know what they are. We just know them when we see them. When we see him being met.
But yeah, the first game was really a beaut. I mean, it was Sugano was really good.
That's what
good.
I was going to mention. It was the matchup of the two CL wins leaders from last year, and it was supposed to be this, knock them out, drag them out.
Well, it was 1-0 until the eighth
inning.
It was,
but But Sugano, well, wasn't.
And then the Giants gave it away.
Yeah, but.
It was.
But, yeah, Sugano just, he really wasn't all that.
Till the seventh inning, excuse me.
Yeah. No, it was the eighth. You're correct. The eighth inning. Sugano just really wasn't great. And still, I don't know how the Giants got seven hits off Olsetta the way he was throwing, but and the Carp only had seven hits, so
yeah, but all the Giants' hits were singles.
So. Yeah, so but yeah, we're flip flopping. But anyway, if let's go from Saturday to Sunday, I didn't actually see much of the game Sunday, but yeah, the Giants did enough to win, and they got the pitching and Taylor Youngman. I remember seeing him last year and I kept thinking, what is he doing to trick the batters with the timing? Because he didn't look like he was throwing that hard. And then this year, it looked like he was a different kind of guy. He was throwing up in the zone, so I just assumed he was throwing a little bit harder. But I didn't see much of that game today. I just know that they...
Well, that was also a close game. It was 3-3 until the ninth, and then the Carp defense forgot. You know, it was like everything went wrong. And bang, three errors in the inning, including one from Mr. Chono, had his first hit and his first error as a Carp.
Mr. Chono. They call him Mr. Chono. Well, yeah, nobody said he was a great addition to the team. You just said he was an addition to the team. All right, and then down at Osaka, we had the Hanshin Tigers and the Yakult Swallows. And what a fun series that was for pitching. I was really actually impressed. I tabbed it as the team with the best pitching against the team with probably the best hitting in the Central League. And as that cliche...
I think the Swallows' offense is overrated, I think.
Well, I think it's still young in some spots, but it could be overrated. But they still...
Well, I thought last year they were overrated. I mean, they scored a lot of runs, but I think that's... Partly, that's a lot of that is a park illusion.
Okay, but it was a really fun series if you like pitching, and the Tigers were looking to sweep, and the Yakult Swallows stood up, and one of their new additions, Hirotoshi Takanashi, he threw a great game for them today, and they avoided the sweep, but still close games.
Well, in fact, I think that was. That was the two little teams that couldn't score.
Well, you know, and I mentioned it. I said, look, Hanshin, I think, has the best pitching, you know, rotation.
Their pitching is good. Rotation.
The starters are good. And it looks like the bullpen is going to be decent, too. But how are they going to get runs? I think, you know, they've got marked guys in their lineup. You're not going to give them anything good to pitch, try to make them get themselves out. And then the other guys you're going to attack. And even the Swallows pitchers made him look bad most of the time. But, you know, Yoshio Itoi, my man, anybody who has been listening to this show knows I have an incredible man crush on Yoshio Itoi in that swing. And he hit a ball on Saturday that I'm still not sure was a home run. I don't know that there was any angle that would show on the TV replays that it was foul. But I don't know, man. It looked fair. It looked foul to me. But they called it a fair, and it was a home run, and that was the only run of the game, and the Tigers won 1-0. But I think,
as usual, Masanori Ishikawa. I mean, he's got this thing. It's like for about 3 months of the season, he makes you wonder why he's still playing baseball.
Right.
And then opening day, it's like opening day. I mean, or close to opening day is like going, ha, young, we're for snappers. I'll show you how to pitch. And then, you know, and then the season goes on and he has those games every now and then. But boy, opening day, watch out. That guy's just like, maybe it's just that after spring, it's the only time he's healthy all year. I don't know.
That might be it. He's feeling
well,
good.
He's about 60 years old, so damn.
All right. And then in the Pacific League, I think for me, the big series was the Lions, who won the league championship last year, but lost in the playoffs against the Hawks, who beat them.
And last year set a team record for wins to open the season.
That's right. Well, they might set a record for losses to open the season, or a club record, maybe. I don't know. It was fun to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, we see SoftBank, basically, it's at points, not throughout the series, but just having their way with the pitching when they needed to. And they out-hit the Lions enough in the opener, a one-run game. It was 5-4. And then they won the next day 6-5, and today they won 3-1. So they had a little bit of breathing room, but they got the sweep.
a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. And I thought the interesting thing about today's game was the Takahashi versus Takahashi on the mound, the matchup there, because their names sound the same, but they're not the same. Did you notice that?
What do you mean their names sound the same, but they're not the same?
The kanji's different.
One's Taka. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the reading is the same, but they use different...
No. It looks virtually the same, but there's an extra line in Kona Takahashi's name of the Seibu Lions. His name has an extra line in there. I actually noticed it when I saw it on Pro Yaku News. I had never noticed it before, and I had put it on pause, and I looked over, and I'm like, yeah, the Takahashi, and then I saw the extra line in the other Takahashi, so I asked about it. So, yeah, their names are
which
not
character?
Same. The Taka, the first one.
Okay.
But Yuki Yanagita, one of my other man crush situations, he had a grand slam on Saturday, and then he had his second home run today on Sunday, and just really impressive start for them to go at the defending champions and show them. I called it a statement series for them, and but it's early in the season. Who cares? To be honest, but it's a nice start for them, I think.
Sure. I mean, it was not, you know, they swept, but it was a fairly close series. I mean, none of the games were blowouts, so it was kind of interesting. I mean, the game one had a chance to be a blowout until Hotaka Yamakawa, you know, showed what he could do. And the thing that, I guess the thing that got to me was looking at both leagues. Mm-hmm. I'm a little premature. We've got a couple series left to go. But
just a couple.
Was that, yeah, but the point is the low scoring and the 2-11 strikeout games,
mm-hmm.
the low scoring in the Swallows Tigers series and the 2-11 strikeouts games, and that's the Central League. And the Pacific League, yeah, you know what, there's like 8 guys with one home run in the Central League. You know how many guys there are with multiple home runs in the Pacific League? 6.
Wow.
And 2 of them have 3. So Zealous Wheeler and Brandon Laird have 3. And then 4 other guys have 2.
Yeah, well, speaking of Zealous Wheeler and Brandon Laird, that series between the Eagles and the Marines was really fun, too. And the Eagles took 2 out of 3 there. And obviously, they lost Takayuki Kishi. I think it's a hamstring.
I'm not certain.
But I'm not certain
heard.
Either. They just said left leg or, yeah, I think it was a left leg. So
it was having a Uwakon, the discomfort.
The discomfort, yeah. So he was taken off the roster, and they have already, they're without Takahiro Norimoto, their ace, so this is a problem, but they were able to come back and win after losing Kishi on Saturday, and there were 12 home runs hit in that series, an opening series with 12 home runs.
Yeah, I think that's going to be
the
Pacific League is going to be a little different this year.
Yeah, and 3 of them went into that home run lagoon, including the first one. Zealous Wheeler hit it, and I heard, I don't know if it was TV or radio, he's going to get a free year supply of ice cream for that first home run that went into the lagoon.
Damn.
So
I got to hang around with him.
Yeah. And then another kid, or up-and-coming player, I hope he's arriving this season. I hope he breaks out. That's Rui Okoye, and he had a super catch in one of the games, and then he had a 3-run home run on Saturday, and another pitching woe for the Marines is that Mike Bolsinger had to leave game 2 early, kind of early-ish, with an injury that was deemed later to be not, you know, nothing unusual, so they just have to wait and see how he is. So he had 2 pitchers leave games, a bunch of home runs, some nice defensive plays. That was a really fun series too, I think, to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to be in Chiba. Just when you go out there, the field is a lot smaller. I mean, the foul territory is really shrunk now.
Yeah,
because the dugouts are about 10 or 12 feet farther into the field. The stands along each side of the infield are about 15 feet farther into the field. The same with the outfield, most of the outfield. So they shrank the field by about probably 2 or 3%.
Yeah.
A lot more base hits, a lot more home runs.
Not more excitement.
It's gonna be, yeah, it's going to be some fireworks. Well, there's always fireworks in Chiba. There's going to be more fireworks than just the fifth after the fifth inning.
Yeah, now. Yeah. So, yeah, I can't wait to actually get out there and check that out, too. But also in Hokkaido, we had a really fun series with the Fighters and the Buffaloes. And unfortunately for the Buffaloes, they didn't come away with a win, but they didn't get swept. Well, they didn't technically get a three-game sweep.
No, they tied one. So
they had a tie. But the first game Friday, Sho Nakata hits the grand slam in the 10th inning. And they woke that bear up in Hokkaido. There are often bear sightings up there in Hokkaido, but I think they really had... Nakata had 9 RBIs in the series. And he came back on Saturday, and even though Saturday ended in a tie, he knocked in all 4 runs, including a clutch single late for the Fighters to get them even, and then they ended up tying that. So it's a good start for him. And even Yuki Saito... pitched in a meaningful moment in a game. I had to tweet out the horror.
I saw that.
I'm like, no.
There was like a little gif attached to that. Somebody covering in their eyes or something.
Yes. That's exactly. I don't know. I was able to send the tweet out because that's what I was doing. But really fun. I'm so glad baseball is back, and it's just awesome to have it going. So I wish we could talk forever. We've got to move on, make a 4-seam transition, and talk about Ichiro Suzuki and his retirement. Now, we did touch on it last week. We did talk about it a little bit, but gee, did you happen to see him on the news at any point during the week?
Since then?
Yeah, since
you mean just replays of the press conference, or
no?
What's he doing in Seattle?
It seemed like every channel was contractually obligated to do a 1-hour special, at least a 1-hour special on Ichiro.
Yeah, there was a lot of it. NHK had one, and somebody else had one yesterday, and blah 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 blah. And my wife's going gaga over Ichiro. What a wonderful person.
Yeah. Well.
So okay.
He was in that press conference. I again, anyone who got a chance to see it, I'm sure you saw a different side of him, and that was really him soaking it up too. I believe, and you know, I'm sure you heard about the D. Gordon letter, that D. Gordon took out a full page ad just to write a letter and say thank you to Ichiro. And
yeah, that was touching.
And I read the whole thing, but it made me mad because I wanted to make these comments last week, but we just didn't have time with doing the Central League preview as well. I'm like, D, you took all my lines, you know. It's like he spot malware or something in my computer, and he saw what I had written because I did take some notes. But you know, among Asian players, I think. We just don't get the full grasp of what Ichiro's impact on baseball was worldwide. And I think among Asian players, among players, and this is what I was going to say, just players who are slight in build, because anytime major league scouts look at players, they, especially when they come over here to Asia, one of the first things they look at is the body type. And they say, well, that guy, he won't hold up physically throughout a major league season. And I think you look at Ichiro, and that's one of the first things you're concerned about. You're wondering, well, does he even weigh 165 pounds? Where does this guy, I mean, he's gonna wear out. And I think it just, you know, his arm strength, his speed, his impressiveness on the field as a young player, as even when he went over in his 20s.
27.
So, 27, okay. At that time, he's got a wiry, strong build, but still, you have to wonder. D. Gordon talked about this in his letter, saying, you know, I knew if a guy like you could play like that, then I would have a chance to play in this game. And D. Gordon is playing a middle infield spot, so you know, that's a lot more wear and tear than standing in the outfield. So it was really touching. I watched Ichiro play here in Japan. I saw him go over there. I thought he would have success. I never imagined at the age of 45 he would still be out there on the field trying to play. Unfortunately, he couldn't get that hit to go into retirement with the great feeling with the capper. Even if it was going to be an infield hit. And they had one of the specials that I saw there was a photographer who has taken pictures of Ichiro for decades, and he said he'd never seen a picture like the one he took when Ichiro's final at bat, and he ends up grounding out. And he said when he was running to first base, it was an all-out push yourself to get to first base as hard as you can. But he said that last at bat when he was running to first base, it was a look of sadness, a little gleam in his eye that he knew that this was the last time, and he'd never seen a picture like that. You know, his mind was not on the actual running to first base. His mind was on the fact that his career was over, and he could see it in that picture. So I thought that was kind of touching.
Well, it was interesting. It looked like he was going to have the third at bat was going to be his last one. He ended up getting a fourth at bat.
Right.
But it was of course the news was spreading. It was announced about just about 7 o'clock. The word went out. The Kyoto News, one of my colleagues at Kyoto News broke the story that he was going to announce his retirement, and that's when Kyoto put it out. And so by about 9 o'clock, pretty much everybody in the stadium knew he was going to retire, and you could hear the volume increasing and increasing and increasing. Of course, people suspected it anyway, but you know, everybody's got their phones on, everybody knows what's going on, people are talking to people. And it was just amazing. It was just so touching. The whole thing was really, you just never, you know, I mean, the only thing that could have made a more perfect ending, you know, was a home run, you know, go off like Ted Williams, hit a home run in your final at bat.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but other than that, it was pretty much a perfect ending. And that was in Japan, made it that much better. And as for the press conference...
Well, let me interject.
Oh, go ahead. Since, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just when you said it was in Japan, you know, this whole thing seemed to me to be in the works, and it seemed like the U.S. press knew he was going to retire and was talking about that almost before the year began. But I went and looked it up on the on our database, and I remember when the M's decided that they were going to play these games and made the announcement that that they were going to play at Tokyo Dome two games. And the time after that they made the announcement that Ichiro was going to take this nebulous front office job, non-coaching,
special assistant to the chairman.
Whatever it was. The non-player, non-coach position where he can't be on the bench, but he's going to wear a uniform and work out. I don't know what that was. But anyway, I suspected from that time on that they said, well, look, we'll let you fade out in Tokyo. And that was the whole plan.
Well, I don't think that was the whole plan. But I think that was the ideal one is, Ichiro wants to come back and he comes back. It's a silly plan because, as I've said before, you know, you watch Ichiro and he didn't, you know, his progression towards retirement was pretty steady from about 2010.
Mm-hmm.
From about 2009, you could pretty much see that, you know, every year he had one uptick when he learned to be a role player.
Right.
And he started drawing walks in Miami.
And he was a pretty decent.
And he had like his second best. Yeah. So he had that one little uptick where he kind of learned a new role. But pretty much it was a downhill slope from about 2007. And, you know, if it's another guy, he's 42 years old and he says, I'm going to work out like I never worked out before. Mm-hmm. I'm going to train. I'm going to improve my diet like I never did before. Well, what's Ichiro going to do? He's going to work out more. He's going to eat better. He's going to take better care of himself. He can't. He's maxed out. He's where he is because he was maxed out when he was 27 years old.
That's an awesome comment.
There's some room for improvement. I think had he actually, you know, thought about wanting to play until he was 50, he would have realized, geez, you know, if I learned to be a home run hitter, I could stick around until I'm 50. You know, I could still have a job.
Right.
But that wasn't his game, and so he didn't go down that route, and he went another way, and that's the way he went. He's the one who has to live with his life, not me, so I can't say what's right or wrong for him. But the whole point was there was no really room left for him to get any better. So I think the Mariners did hold out hope that he would actually be useful. The chance, they wanted that chance that he would be a useful player in 2019. Mm-hmm. The fact that it wasn't going to happen meant, okay, plan B in Tokyo is a really, really, really good plan B.
Yeah. Yeah. You say plan B. I think they knew at the time that they just cut things off last year. I think they made the decision then, but I don't know.
Well, they knew that. Well, they knew that option was coming. I'm sure I had heard in May, just about that time, I had already heard that the teams had already been set because Jim Smoltz said he wouldn't tell me what the teams are, but they pretty much everything was set. And then they announced the Tokyo thing like right afterwards. So when he was released on May 7th or 9th, they said, "Don't go anywhere."
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was
because he said he was ready to retire then. He was ready to retire when he was basically ready to retire if he didn't have a job at the start of last season.
Right.
And then he was getting ready to retire last year. And the touching thing for me, or I guess one of the number of surprises, I guess I'll go into this before I move on. As you said, it was a really, it was really Ichiro, and he says a lot of things. He's not, doesn't like the press. He doesn't like, it's not that he doesn't like reporters. He doesn't like this. It seems he doesn't like the situation that reporters, especially newspaper beat reporters,
mm-hmm.
need quotes every day,
right.
Especially in Japan. You got to get a quote from everybody. That's their job. Let's get a quote from everybody. Oh. The Japanese players, they're playing in America. We need a quote every single day.
Right.
Well, he's got nothing to say, but they got to get a quote. So what they're saying is, tell me a lie. Tell me something that you're tell me a lie you're comfortable saying so that we can put it in the paper. And it's a conspiracy of sorts between the media. And I'm not kidding. I mean, this is the thing that drives some people in baseball, it drove Hiromitsu Ochai absolutely nuts.
Mm.
And I think Ichiro the same way. It's not that he disliked the reporters themselves, but he knew that their jobs, Katsuya Nomura would do the same thing. He'd like, except Katsuya Nomura and Ochai sometimes would twist it so that he would basically use it to take digs at the press, and Ichiro would as well. And he would show the press his disdain for them. So basically he was living this sort of, everything I tell you is for your consumption. It's not the truth.
Right.
And so when it's finally a case where I actually want to talk and I have something to say, and he spills his gut, he more or less, you know, says the way things are, and people are willing to let that go. Then it's magical because it's a completely different person than the person who's there trying to be honest,
mm-hmm.
and as he normally is, but is unable to be. He feels like, you know, the press is trying to make a liar out of him because that's what they want. You know, they don't care what he says is right or wrong or honest or not, as long as he says it. So going from that to something where people are actually listening to what he says and what he wants to say.
Mm-hmm.
is a huge difference. It's a huge, big step. We saw that with the Marlins press conference when he joined the Florida Marlins in Tokyo.
Right.
And I've seen it a couple of other instances, but the Tokyo one was magical. So.
Well, you know, he's.
And speaking of which, if you haven't seen it, the full transcript of Ichiro's farewell press conference in Japanese is now translated on my website, jballallen.com.
Yep, please check it out. It's good reading. You know, I couldn't watch all the specials. I know he's a national treasure, literally, and I expect to see him on TV a lot. I don't know when, where, or how. And I wonder what's next for him. He said in the presser that he wasn't interested in becoming a manager. But he also said he's not the kind of person to sit around and do nothing. So I'm curious, you know, what he competes in next, because he's highly competitive, and I think he's going to have to find a competitive outlet. So that'll be interesting to see where he goes. And I actually hope he changes his mind and he joins the team and he tries to come, maybe comes back to Japan and coaches, or even if he coaches in the States, I I think he'd be more popular than any player on his team, even if he's just a coach. But I hope he stays in baseball.
I could see him coaching in America.
I
couldn't see him coaching in Japan because he takes exception to the rules, the way Japanese baseball is structured.
But that's exactly why I think he would, and I think he could. Now he could. He could actually make change because he's got that kind of...
No, but we're not talking about structured, the unwritten rules. We're talking about the written rules that prohibit certain things you can't do as a pro. He takes a great deal of umbrage with that. And that's what he said at the press conference. I wouldn't have anything to do basically with being a professional coach or manager in Japan because the rules keep coaches, amateurs and professionals apart.
All right. Well, yeah, I think if anybody could change it, he could. So,
well, he can't change it. I mean, everybody's trying to change it.
Champion for change.
Promote change, yeah. Yes. Well, I think more likely he would be in. You know, he might like run a club team, or he might run a go to work at a college, or do this or do that. It might be fun. College baseball could certainly use him.
All right. Well, we could use a little bit of a transition and move on from that. But the great Ichiro is gone, and we appreciate it. Certainly, I appreciate it being able to see his final game here in Tokyo. That was awesome. It was great to be there. So, all right.
Indeed,
so
that was special.
Yep. Making a two-seam transition, we have one note, and that is the first-time first-teamers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking... as you know, we talked about as teams were talking about who was going to be, you know, which rookies were going to be, and I was thinking particularly about Kyota Fujiwara with the Marines. You know, the first kid to go from high school graduation to opening day position player starter since Shohei Ohtani in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of piqued my interest. So okay, how many guys were on? How many guys went from amateur draft pick to opening day on the 28-man roster? And the answer is, I should count this, hold on a second here, 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So 10 in NPB.
Mm-hmm.
The breakdown is, the interesting one is 9 of those guys have played.
9 have played.
The one guy, 9 have played. 9 have got into games. The 10th guy who didn't get in the game was the guy who the Hiroshima Carps said wouldn't be on the opening day roster. But it's like I almost smell the owner saying, oh, no, he's going to be on the roster. You put him on the roster. Because sometimes the Carp owner does that.
You can smell it, huh?
That's what it seems like. Because after 2 days of not playing, sitting on the bench, he's now back on the farm team where they promised he would be. That's Kaito Kozono, who seems like a heck of a player, but they don't have any place for him right now. So the Carp are doing the intelligent thing and not the typically the kind of old-timey Carp thing was, and they're putting him on the farm team. They had a pitcher, Sotaro Shimauchi, their second-round draft choice, threw an inning. The Tanshin Tigers had 2 guys who started 5 games between them. Seiya Kinami, the shortstop, he batted leadoff the first 2 games against the Swallows. And Koji Chikamoto started all 3. He's their top draft pick. He started all 3 games in center field. Those 2 guys were instrumental in the Tigers' first game win over the Swallows. Chikamoto threw out a runner, scoring at home in the first inning, and he drove in the winning run. So the Hawks had 2 guys. Hiroshi Kaino, their first pitcher, their first round draft choice, struck out 6 batters in 2 2/3 innings over 2 games.
Yeah, he was.
So that looked awesome. Nice.
Yeah,
he got the win on opening day in extra innings. Then we had their 7th round draft choice, Masato Okumura, pitched in 2 games. Didn't really do much. The Lions had infielder Yusei Sato, 7th round draft choice, played 1 game on defense at third base. The Oryx Buffaloes, second draft pick, Yuma Tongu, started all 3 games for Oryx at third base, drove in a couple of runs in his first plate appearance for them. The Marines, the aforementioned Kyota Fujiwara, and the Eagles had Ryosuke Tatsumi, their first-round draft choice, started got his first start on Sunday
and got a hit
and had a nice game. Yeah, 1-for-3, 2 walks, a run and an RBI. So well done.
Yeah, yeah. That if that outfield is, for example, Tanaka, Okoye, and this guy Tatsumi, speed, they can all throw. Okoye's got the power. Tanaka's got a little bit of pop. That's really spectacular outfield defensively. I don't know how you're going to hit any gaps in that. You have to really hit to keep the ball low. So, awesome.
Yeah, that's like an outfield for the old Pacific League with the big parks, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder when they're bringing all the fences. I wonder if the Pacific League is going to go a little slower like the Central League or not. Anyway, moving along.
Okay, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so this question we actually addressed on the Great Lost episode of 2019. but we're going to get to it because we appreciate Michael Westbay making the comment. And he wrote to us, he said he just listened to the podcast. This was a month ago now. And when we were talking about...
And he's just listening?
No, this was a month ago when we got the comment. And we had a discussion about the roster change or the rule change for this year and the 29 men on the roster who will be registered, but only 28 active. And so he said you might have one more person having a day on the top roster counting toward their free agency status. And it doesn't matter if they are active on the roster for the game as long as they are registered on the first team. And so he was wondering how that was going to impact the service time. Mm-hmm. And so we had addressed it, but if you remember what you said, because...
I remember what I said because my opinion hasn't changed since I heard the question.
Okay, and that is?
Which is, basically no difference because there's a very rare, service time's 140 days on the roster, on the first team roster. So there'll be more guys accumulating a few extra days. But generally, these are going to be starting pitchers. I could see there is a very few cases. It will affect the guys like Kodai Senga, maybe, who spent a lot of time bouncing up and down from the farm team because they had no real role for him. He was good, but they couldn't use him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't want to have him hanging around because they had a lot of good pitchers. So In cases like that where he's an extra good arm, it's a quality player, that might shave, it conceivably might shave a year off the time it takes him to make free agency because we're talking about a dozen or a couple of dozen games a year. And it very likely that if, for example, Senga had about 50 or 60 more days on the roster that he might become a free agent a year earlier. But it's pretty rare. It might affect a couple of people, but I don't think it's going to be any big difference one way or the other.
And what Michael said is what he was hoping will happen is that this will help reduce the number of persons being dropped for 10 days at a time.
Mm-hmm. And well, that is true.
Yeah, I agree. You can like we saw it a lot with the Kazuki Yoshimi of the Dragons. He would pitch. Also, Daisuke Matsuzaka, he would pitch, and then they would send him to... They'd basically take him off the roster because that was a 10-day cycle and then bring him back up for his next start.
Might happen, although with Yoshimi, it was less to do with dropping him for 10 days, but knowing that he needed more than 6 or 7 days to be ready for, so it wasn't just 10. Sometimes it was 12. Sometimes it was 14. So, I mean, his was more of a, when his arm's ready, nobody knew.
Right.
So.
And so I think when I answered it, I just said I never considered service time as a factor. And so that
true. Really... I thought that was very insightful that I hadn't thought about it either. I don't think it's going to make a big impact, but it for me, I didn't see it, but thank you to Michael for pointing that out.
Yeah, I thought that was very astute and very helpful, and it's probably true for a few players, and it's going to impact some guys, and other guys it won't impact that much at all. And, I always talk about the elevator guys who are always going from the minors up to the top team and then back to the minor league team, and I don't think it's gonna impact a lot of those guys. But I was thinking that there were going to be some position players as well. And you also pointed out the fact that it's probably mainly going to be pitchers. So
I think it's going to be starting. Instead of three starting pitchers between starts, it'll now be four starting pitchers between starts.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to change at all. So.
Okay. All right. Our Twitter handle has not changed, and we still accept MP3 questions. So shoot us a note on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send those questions and MP3s by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page for a comment. Enjoy these games, man. I'm real happy that baseball's back, and I'm real excited to watch. So we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Yep. We'll be back. And also, I'll be back with the podcast, even though I am accepting a new role as the international director for the Tohoku Rakuten Golden Eagles.
Huh? What? It's your April Fool's joke, right?
Correct. You heard it here or you didn't hear it here. Depends when you're listening.
But aren't you going to say it's April Fool's?
Only this, that, oh, I'm sorry, it's only for April 1st.